Good morning, everyone. I have tested negative. And some of you are going, huh? So if you weren't here 2 weeks ago, I wasn't here because I had tested positive for COVID. It took me 5 tests in 10 days to get a negative. So once I finally got the negative, I said no more tests. So I have a few lingering symptoms. I have a lot of throat clearing and a lingering cough. And the more I talk, the more I cough. So you might be ready on the mute button back there pretty quick this morning. So anyway, it's good to be back, and it's good to see all of you here, whether you're in person or online. We want to welcome you. So there will be some parts early on in the message that I hope will be interactive. Whether my hopes are met or dashed are completely up to you. And so if you're online and you want to throw your comments into the chat section of things, that would be great. The people at the table might even yell out your responses in the room as well. So if you were asked what one of the most quoted parts of the Bible might be, what might you list? 23rd Psalm. John 3:16. Lord's Prayer. The Beatitudes. What's that? Ask and you will receive. We're going to talk about that later this year.
John 13:34.
What's that one say?
Love one another as I have loved you, so you must love one another.
Love one another as I have loved you. As I have loved you, so you must love one another. What else? Anything else? Okay, let's put a little bit of a twist on the same question. If you were asked to say what one of the most quoted parts of the Bible were by people who don't follow Jesus, what would you put on their list?
Don't be judged.
Don't be judged. Cheater. Do not judge. That's one. What else? Anything else?
Ask and you shall receive.
We're going to talk about that at some point. Actually, you know what? I think we just talked about that 3 weeks ago in part one of the Twisted series. But then again, I've been delirious with fever and have COVID brain fog. So I barely remember what I had for breakfast.
Ten commandments.
One more?
The
Ten Commandments. Philippians 4:13. Yeah, so there are a lot of things that we quote. There are a lot of things that followers of Jesus quote. Sometimes they don't even realize it's a quote from Jesus. Sometimes they don't even realize it's in the Bible. But sometimes there are quotes that we try to leverage, that when we try to leverage them, we twist what Jesus said and we twist what Jesus meant. And if we're going to leverage or attempt to leverage what Jesus said, then it is imperative upon us to understand what he said and what he meant. We have to get it right. One of the most common phrases that people use as a quote from Jesus, whether they know it's from him or not, is, "Do not judge, or you too will be judged." Now, when we say this, what we're saying is, you let me live my life, and I'll let you live your life. Don't tell me what I should and shouldn't do, and I won't tell you what you should and shouldn't do. Very few of us like to be judged. How many people like to be judged? Yeah, I didn't think we'd have any takers on that one. We don't like to be judged, and we tend to push back in some way when we feel as if we're being judged. Study after study after study shows that that being judged or feeling judged is one of the top reasons why people resist becoming a follower of Jesus. They feel like their interactions with other people who claim to be followers of Jesus is marked with hypocrisy and legalism and narrow-mindedness and judgmentalism. Barna Barna Research did a study that led to David Kinnaman and Gabe Lyons writing a book in 2007 called Unchristian. And the whole study was based on people during that time frame who were between the ages of 16 to 29 and their perceptions about people who profess to be Christians. And basically what they said is they may profess to be Christians, but their behavior, their attitudes, and their approach is very unchristian. That's why they titled the book Unchristian. They dedicated a whole chapter to this perception about do not judge or you too will be judged. And the perception that Kinnaman and Lyons came out with in the book based on the study of 16 to 29-year-olds is, guess what? They expected out of Christians. They expected Christians to be legalistic, narrow-minded, and judgmental. They just expected it and said, that's what we expect Christians to do. Though Jesus said, do not judge or you too will be judged, for in the same way you judge others, you will be judged, they expect them very clearly to be judged and to be judgmental. Now, when Jesus says this, it's important for us to understand what he said and what he meant. At some point, there's the reality that we all live in, that we are judged and we judge other people, right? So if we live in the reality that judging exists, and Jesus said, do not judge or you too will be judged, what did he mean? What did he mean when he said this? If you take this at a surface level, and Jesus says, do not judge, that would seem to me that the teacher has no grounds to determine whether the paper I turned in gets an A or an F. Who are you to judge my work? Who are you to judge my paper? Jesus said, do not judge. So I turn my paper in and should get whatever grade I determine I should get. Or, if we take this at face value, there should be no reason that a trial or a jury of my peers should determine whether I'm innocent or guilty. Who are they to judge whether I committed a crime? A police officer would have no grounds to pull me over and tell me that I was driving on the wrong side of the road. Because Jesus said, do not judge. Now, when Jesus talked about this, he had just previously challenged the Jewish religious leaders on the issue of hypocrisy. The Jewish religious leaders had gotten really, really good at leveraging the law to accuse and to judge other people. Even so much so as to judge the intent and the motive of the heart and even relationship with God. And so when Jesus says, do not judge, it is in the context of the overall hypocrisy of the Jewish religious leaders. One of the things that's very interesting is Jesus tended to communicate more judgment on the Jewish religious leaders than he did on the people the Jewish religious leaders judged. Jesus says, do not judge, or you too will be judged. If it's important for us to understand what he means, then we should probably start with the word judge. Now, most of the time, we understand the words do not. Right? And unless you're a child, and your parent says do not, and apparently you thought they said do. So, do not. We get that part. Do not means this is something you're not supposed to do. Do not judge. So, what does the word judge mean? In the original language that Jesus would have communicated and that Matthew would have written this in the Greek language, the word for judge is krino. K-R-I-N-O is how we would literate it into English. And it is used in several different ways. So, the first way that krino is used is do not make a decision about that. So when Jesus says, do not judge, is Jesus saying that we should not make decisions? I guess we'll have to decide whether we're supposed to make decisions or not. So that apparently, it clearly is not the context that Jesus is saying is do not make decisions or decisions will be made on you. It's clearly not what he's saying. The other use is in a court of law. And so when Jesus says do not judge or you too will be judged, is he saying that we should do away with the legal system, that we should do away with justice, that we should do away with courts of law? Probably not, because in other things that Jesus said, he clearly talked about obeying the law of the land and governing authorities and things like that. So clearly Jesus is not talking about a court of law. The other use of krino is that it's harshly or unjustly criticizing someone, even including their heart and their motives. In the context that Jesus is speaking, he is saying, first use krino is okay. Second use krino is okay. Maybe even necessary in life in some instances. Third usage krino, that's the one he's talking about. Do not judge. Do not unjustly or harshly criticize someone else, including their heart and their motives. Do not judge, or you too will be judged. It is important for us to understand, again, in the context of the hypocrisy. Jesus is saying, do not judge them because you have some stuff to deal with as well. The reality is that most of us understand that judging takes place all the time. My guess is there are times where each of us have benefited from the reality of someone speaking judgment of some way, in some way, into our lives. That maybe we were heading down a path that was going to lead somewhere we didn't want to end up, and someone spoke into our lives and said, you might want to rethink this decision-making process. You might want to rethink the path that you're on. And we've benefited from that. So the judging in and of itself is not bad. Judging is oftentimes necessary in life, in our lives and in the lives of others. But the reality is, it's this unharsh criticism and questioning the heart and the motives of another person that Jesus seems to be addressing and Jesus seems to have a problem with. So if we are going to judge in the manner in which Jesus talked about judging, how do we do that? Where do we start? Jesus gives us a starting point in what he says next. He says, why do you look at the speck of sawdust in your brother's eye and pay no attention to the plank in your own eye? How can you say to your brother, let me take the speck out of your eye, when all the time there is a plank in your own eye? It's almost as if Jesus says, when you look at the lives of other people and you judge them, you need to think about what's going on in your life before you judge them. How can you judge someone else when you have the issues in your own life that you need to address and deal with? Rather than judging someone else, why don't you look into the mirror and take responsibility for your own issues and then figure out how to address them? The word that's translated plank here is a word that literally means a large square timber. It could even refer to the beam of a house. And so Jesus is using hyperbole here. He's saying, how can you see the speck of dust in somebody else's eye when all the time you've got a house beam running through yours? It was ridiculous. And it probably would have garnered laugh from Jesus' audience. He says, you can't see clearly into the lives of other people because you've got your own stuff. You've got this enormous issue that you haven't dealt with, but yet you want to turn around and judge other people. The Jewish religious leaders that Jesus challenged the issue of hypocrisy on were masters at this. They would go around and talk about everybody else's issues and everybody else's sins and everybody else's problems, and all the while they would ignore their own. And in fact, from other things Jesus said and other encounters he had with them, it was very, very clear that they did that in an effort to make themselves look better. And in the context of challenging their hypocrisy, Jesus says, look, you've got this going on with you. You've got this issue. This is an opportunity for you to look in the mirror and to define and refine an issue in your life before you look at somebody else. Now, how many people have ever had something in their eye? Now, how many people understand that when you have something in your eye, it's a little difficult to see? And sometimes when you have something in your eye, what you see is distorted or blurry or fuzzy. And that's kind of Jesus' point here. Jesus says, you've got something in your eye. And when you've got something in your eye, it's a little bit fuzzy. It's a little bit unclear. And when you've got something in your eye and you try to look into somebody else's life with something in your eye, what you see may be fuzzy, may be distorted. And so address your own stuff first, and then you'll be able to see clearly. And that's what Jesus says right here. He actually says, in pretty strong language, you hypocrite. He says, hypocrite. He says, you hypocrite, first take the plank out of your own eye. Then you will see clearly to remove the speck from your brother's eye. Address your own stuff first. Get this big, massive, square timber roof beam thing out of your eye. And when you get that out of your eye, and here's the thing, if you've got a big square timber roof beam, house roof beam thing going through your eye, you can't see anything. That thing's so big, it's blocked your entire view. But yet somehow, in our wisdom, even though we've got this whole thing blocking our view, we can see into everybody else's life and point out all their flaws and all their wrongdoings and all that. You can't see anything in front of your own face, but you can see into everybody's life and know what they're doing wrong enough to tell them about it. It says, first, take the plank out of your own eye, then you will see clearly how to remove the speck from your brother's eye. And then all of a sudden, it's almost as if Jesus gives us permission to help remove the speck from someone else's eye. He says, take care of your own stuff, and then you'll be able to help somebody else. Notice that he doesn't say, don't help anybody else. Notice that he doesn't say, don't point out other people's issues and problems. What he says is, do it in the context of not judging the motives in the heart and by dealing with your own stuff first. Get your stuff together and then you can help somebody else. Because here's the thing, when you go to help somebody else with issues in your own life, what do they say? Well, you can't even get this together. Why do you have any right to come and tell me what I did? Or sometimes they just look at, how about you deal with your own stuff and leave my stuff to me? Or sometimes they look back and say, you know, didn't you know Jesus said not to judge? So if we are going to help remove the speck from somebody else's eye, how do we do that? When you go to help someone, what's the most effective way to help someone? Or when someone goes to help you, what's the most effective way for someone to help you? Is it for somebody to come to you and point out how wrong you are, how horrible you are, how destructive this is going to be? Or is the better approach for somebody to come and to look at you and say, you know what, I love you. I care about you. This isn't going to jeopardize the relationship between us. Maybe it's things like love and grace and compassion that help move the needle on the speck in someone else's eye. Maybe it's the same kind of love, grace, and compassion that God showed to us that helps soften people's hearts to be able to address matters that need not just detection, but correction. What's the goal? Is the goal to just go around and make people know they're wrong? Is the goal to go around and make a point and never make a difference? Or is the goal to help people move down a more effective path in life and maybe, just maybe, even the opportunity to invite people to follow Jesus? And maybe the most effective way to do that is through love, grace, and compassion. The same kind of love that we want shown to us, maybe we should show it to others. The same kind of grace that we desire to be shown to us, maybe we show it to others. The same kind of compassion that we desire to be shown to us, maybe we show it to others. And maybe when it's marked with love, grace, and compassion, maybe then it's the kind of judging that Jesus talked about and the kind of judging that Jesus actually did. Jesus reserved some of his harshest words for the Jewish religious leaders of his day, the people who were really, really good at pointing out the flaws in everyone else while ignoring their own. Those were the people Jesus had the harshest words for. And let's look at what Jesus says next. Stop judging by mere appearances, but instead judge correctly. Stop judging by mere appearances. Now, if we don't like to be judged, to start with, when we are judged, how many of us like to be judged by someone who doesn't have all the information? Have you ever been judged for something and turned to somebody else and said, but they don't know the whole story? They don't have all the information. Now, here's a tougher question. Have you ever judged someone by mere appearances and been wrong? Jesus says, stop judging by mere appearances. Sometimes there's more going on in a situation than we realize. Sometimes we only see a little snapshot of a bigger picture. Sometimes we only see one small piece of a puzzle, and we judge that piece of the puzzle, not knowing the bigger picture. When sometimes it would be far better to have more information to make an accurate and correct judgment about whatever it is that we're addressing. One of the things that we try to do as a family, when we see something or hear something that it would be easy for us to put some kind of judgment in place, we actually try to step back and wonder what else might be going on in the situation. For example, when we're driving somewhere and a car just comes flying past us, and the easiest thing to say is, man, what's that person's problem? I hope that a mile down the road there's a police officer and it pulls them over and they get a ticket because they're just an idiot for driving that fast, right? What we've done is we've tried to say, I wonder what's going on that's causing them to drive that fast. Maybe Maybe there's an emergency that they're going to. And if there's an emergency they're going to, maybe instead of needing my judgment, what they need are my prayers. And so we try to say a prayer for whatever might be going on in their life. And yeah, it's pure total speculation. But it's a shift of mindset and it's a shift of heart rather than to say, wow, that person's an idiot for driving that fast. Then, man, I hope that something's not wrong in their life that's causing them to drive that fast. Stop judging by mere appearances, but instead judge correctly. Which means sometimes when we don't have all the information, we need to reserve our judgment. We need to sometimes withhold judgment because we don't know enough to judge correctly. And we recognize that if we were to pass judgment in that moment, we would only be passing judgment by mere appearances. And my guess is that some of us have experienced or seen things that looked really, really good on the outside that were just rotten to the core. And my guess is we've also seen things that looked really, really rough around the edges. But you couldn't have asked for anything more loving, gracious, and compassionate than what was on the inside of their heart. There are things that we judge. There are things that we could judge. There are things we do judge. And there are things that we should judge. But never outside the context of addressing our own issues and dealing with our own issues, and in the context of not unjustly and harshly criticizing the condition of the heart and the motives of the heart of an individual. That's the type of judging that Jesus talked about when he said, do not judge or you too will be judged. By the same measure that you use, it will be measured to you. I think most of us would agree that judging takes place. And judging should take place. And so if we're going to judge, what do you say we figure out how to judge the way that Jesus communicated and the way that Jesus himself judged? Rather than judging in such a way that leaves study after study after study revealing that one of the top reasons people resist becoming a follower of Jesus is because of how they are judged by followers of Jesus. This is too important to not understand what Jesus said. And it's too important to not get right in its application in our lives and in the lives of those around us. There are many things that Jesus said that when we try to leverage, we leverage a twisted and distorted version of what he said. To the point that we communicate what he didn't even mean. When we untwist, do not judge, or you too will be judged, it's a huge difference in our lives and in our relationships and maybe even in our relationship with God. Let me pray for you as we wrap up our time. Oh, real quick, one more thing. Sorry, I lied. One more thing. One of the other things that we do in this judging thing is that we very often hold other people to our standards that are not their standards. When our kids have experienced some on the field and on the court comments that get made out there. Sometimes in the car on the way home, they'll say, man, you won't believe what number 17 said. Man, you won't believe the language that they used. And if you ask them what I sometimes say in response to that, I'll say, yeah, actually I would believe it. And I would ask them, what do you expect from someone who may not have the same standards and the same values that you hold? They're living out their life according to the standards and the values that they hold, which may not be the standard and the values that we hold. And Jesus hung out with a lot of people who didn't hold to the same standard that he held to. Jesus didn't hold them to a standard that they didn't hold. Instead, he loved them too much to leave them there. And he operated with love and grace and compassion to point them to what it really means to be connected in right relationship with God. So the goal isn't just to make a point about someone's behavior. The goal is to make a difference in someone's life. And we do that by judging in the way that Jesus did. Now, let me pray for us as we wrap up our time together. Dear God, thank you for this time together. Thank you for the opportunity that we have to explore things that Jesus said, to untwist our understanding of them in a way that gets back to what Jesus really said and what Jesus really meant, and then to explore the difference that that can make in our lives and our relationships and maybe, just maybe, even our relationship with you. And so, God, we live in a world where we all have felt judged, where we all have been judged, where we have judged others. And sometimes we've been judged or we've judged by mere appearances and judged incorrectly. God, help each and every one of us to take the understanding of what Jesus said about judging in the context of our own stuff and questioning the motives and the intentions of other people's heart. Help us to move past that. Help us to move into love and grace and compassion that actually helps people rather than hinders people in relationship with you. We pray all this in Jesus' name. Amen. All right, so next week we're going to deal with part 3 of the Twisted series. Thank you for spending this time with us today. Again, whether in person or online, we're glad that you chose to spend it. We hope it's not the last time that you spend some time with us. We'll roll the preview video for next week. When that preview video is over, we'll be dismissed for the morning. Have a great rest of the day and a great week.